Okay. Anyway, I apologize for the guys who were here the previous year, because this is a repeat. We have a Messiah. There's certain, someone happy, do I have certain Musafam that repeat? The answer is yes. And obviously, there are certain topics that are main topics, and you gotta repeat them, just like in Musar Shmuzim. Many of the Musar Shmuzim, not necessarily the Musar Shmuzim that repeat, but the topics of the Musar Shmuzim are very often repeated, because there's only certain major topics. There's a major inyanim. Anyway, so we have a Messiah. These items are in Parshas B'Shalach, which we sort of missed, so we can't miss it fully. That we give a Musarvad, and the Pasuk, it says that when they went out of Mitzrayim, so it says that Moshe took the Atzmus Yosef. So there's a Medrash that says that we see from here the tremendous Chavivis of mitzvahs of Moshe, that every single body else in Mitzrayim, no one else went to take Atzmus Yosef, probably because it was difficult, whatever, and instead they opt for a different mitzvah of taking the Biza, which has obviously a certain negiyas, you know, you also, while you're doing the mitzvah, you also get money. And Moshe was the only one that he went ahead and he did the mitzvah of Atzmus Yosef. So it says, from here you see a key with a pasuk of Acham Lev Yikach Mitzvah. Anyway, so that's our Messiah, that on the Shalach, we talk about this Midah of Acham Lev Yikach Mitzvah. Nice, it's a Shmuz, but okay. But we once said a Shmuz on that Chazal, but we'll skip the Shmuz. I always tell the story, it's a great story, that I was... How did I get this Midah knocked into my brain a little bit, whatever it is I used to learn when I was single, is a true story, as far as I remember. Not to be menash, but that my other stories aren't true. But this one I really think is actually true. Is I used to learn, there was a very chashvi gadol in Eretz Yisrael. His name was Rav Shia. And with the year the yeshiva was in Israel, I used to learn with him every Shabbat. And we used to learn... basically, we started learning the same time, and whatever it was, 2:30, I think it was, I'm not sure. And we learned straight, he was an amazing master, and we learned straight till Mincha. And we learned till whenever Mincha was. If Mincha was 5, we learned till 5. Mincha was 7, we learned till 7. And we learned to the point that you can only, we had it until the last second. So by the time we only always had a rush to the last minion of Mincha and Yerushalayim, so to speak. You know, there was like one place that had, he lived in Gula, near Gula. So there was one place that had like a really late minion. So we would learn until the last second, then we had to go, because, okay, went to that place. And there was even no time to wash, so he would go home, no time to go home before Shkia. He would wash there, and I would excuse myself, I had to go to Yeshiva. Even when I didn't have to go to Yeshiva for the shmooze, but my brain was usually overloaded by then, so I didn't tell him that I had no shmooze, so I just, you know, excused myself. During Chol Moed Sukkos, I remember, or Chol Moed Sukkos or Pesach, so he knew there was no shmooze in yeshiva, so I didn't have, so he said, oh, we gotta continue, so I was there, ended up being there till like midnight, you know. Which is funny. You know, until we finished the sukkah. Anyway, the ma'isa is an amazing masmid. I used to have to prepare, after we finished learning, I had to prepare something separate to talk about and learning for the walking, because, you know, what else are you going to learn, too? But the Maisa, so he was, we used to go to this, so every week we went to the same minyan, and it was in the middle of Gula. I said there were some very, very chashuva people were diving in that minyan. Some chashuva Rosh Hashivas, and I don't know, whatever, chashuva people. And I was, you know, a young American bacher who was not exactly considered very chashuv, you know. That was, you know, a young kid, single, an American. They can never, the Americans are not, you know, gentlemen. So every week, the same thing used to happen. He would walk into shul, and he'd ask me, did you get an aliyah? I don't think I once got an aliyah in Eretz Yisrael. There was a whole yeshiva there, and during Shabbos, they had a system, rotating system, and I think only the Kodal guys on Hoa got on Shabbos, so I never got an aliyah one Shabbos during the year. So he always say, no. He says, oh, you got to get out of here. So he'd walk into the shul, and he'd walk over to the gabbai, who he knew, and said, give Binyamin Aliyah. Gadol tells you to give Binyamin Aliyah. So every week for a whole year, I get the Aliyah of Shlishi. And after a while, I'm getting very embarrassed because it's a little bit ridiculous. Like, I don't belong here. I don't daven here. I don't live here. I'm this young American kid. There's this minyan with all kinds of chasha people. And every week, I'm getting the Aliyah. Okay. So this went on basically the whole year. So it came near the end of the year, and we walk into the minyan, and the gabbai's not there. I guess he was away, sick, I don't know. So some Hasidic kid was running, took over, no new gabbai. So some Hasidic kid is running the show. And I could see her, she is all, like, oh, you know, what's he going to do? You know, this kid's not going to listen to anything. Doesn't even know him, you know. And sure enough, and I am so relieved. What a Hashem. At least there'll be a break. 1 week, I won't get the Amelia, you know. So sure enough, this kid goes over and he calls up at one of his friends for Cohen. And he walks over to a different friend and pulls him over to Levi. And he walks over to a third friend to call him up for Yisrael. And while he walks up, Rav Shia runs up to the bima, Yamo bin Yamin Shlishi. Anyway, so I got the idea. So I was, you know, like, I was, I mean, the whole shul was like, you know, that was it. But anyway, so then later, without making a long story short, because without getting into it, but later on, you know, he explained to me, this sheet to the hip, that, you know, a mitzvah is the most precious thing in the world. And you gotta, that the mitzvahs are grabbed. No one has a chazak on this mitzvah. No one yet has that. So why shouldn't you grab it? And that's a very, now I don't exactly, you know, start arguing about, you know, guys start arguing when they're not right, and, you know, okay, I don't know the exact case here. But the concept is an amazing concept. The concept is to appreciate what a value of a mitzvah, and there are so many millions and millions of mitzvahs up for grabs. Right? You walk and paste in the base medrash. So someone left this cup on the table. You can just throw it off in the garbage. It's a mitzvah. Keep the base medrash clean. Put a safe away. Bring benches to the table. We might machrayim them. You know, chasodim are especially the easiest thing. There's millions of mitzvahs all over the place. So the idea is acham le'vikach mitzvahs is to appreciate the value of a mitzvah. A mitzvah is $1 million, and it's more than $1 million, but we'll make it just $1 million just for argument's sake. And therefore, you got a chance to get $1 million, you grab it. So I broke it down into three different categories. I'm not sure if from last year we did it this way. Maybe we did. So maybe it's dropped different in previous years. I really broke it down in four, but three categories. The first and most blatant category is you have people or that their mamish offered a mitzvah on a, what's it called, a silver tray, that's the expression, and they turn it down. Right? Any gabbai will tell you that there are people they go over and they ask them, what's your name? I want to give you an aliyah. No, I don't want an aliyah. Like, you're crazy. You know, I'm offering you $1 million. No. You turn down $1 million like that, you know? So, okay, maybe sometimes the guy has a valid reason. He doesn't have his Ibra is not good. Okay, there could be some people that they have a valid reason. But there are definitely people that don't have a valid reason. It's just too lazy. I don't know what it is. Or too whatever that there's no effort, no nothing. It's mamish offered to you, and it's already in your hand. The gabbai is coming to you. No, give it to someone else. I already had aliyah this week. So what? You know, did the gabbai ask you if you had an aliyah already this week? You know, did he say he came over to you and he said, you know, I only want to give you an aliyah? No, he didn't say that. He said, I want to give you an aliyah. Oh, I already had an aliyah. You know, so who said you can't get two aliyahs in 1 week? You can get more than two aliyahs in a week. Hey, if you have that laning, I don't know if you can supposed to get twice in one laning. But if you got chakras, you can get mincha. I never heard of the halacha. Oh, I was in a different shul. They gave me for chakras, so don't give me. You know, like so what? You know, the example I had. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but it also at the same time. It was, these things sort of happened the same time. So when this Maisa with Rav Shia did brought it home, when there was, and I was again in Israel, and there was someone who came from America, and Rabbi Naiman sent them, Rabbi Naiman Sr., sent them on a shlichus. What was the shlichus? That there was a very chashuv person that Rabbi Naiman knew in Eretz Yisrael. I don't remember the person's name anymore. But Rabbi Naiman said he was a chashuv, a gadol, whatever. And he was in need for it. Rabbi Naiman found out that he was in very dire financial need, and he had a special need. And he collected, through the yeshiva, whatever, a very large sum of money. And he gave it to this guy to deliver to this chashuv gadol. So this guy comes to Israel and he starts complaining to me. Oh, Rabbi Naiman gave me, I don't know, you know, let's make up a number, $20,000 to deliver this guy. I'm only here for 2 weeks. I don't want to go schlep to Shaarei Chesed to give him the money, you know. I have a full itinerary, you know. Tours I got to do, you know. Got no time to show. So I said, look, listen, you don't want to deliver it, I'll deliver it for you, you know. You know, basically, I got, you know, I don't know how often a person gets a chance to be a shliach to deliver a large sum of money. Then it was a quite large sum of money collected, you know, in those days for a chashuv gadol. Doesn't happen so often. So here's Rabbi Naiman gave it to him. He made him the shliach. No, I don't want to do it. I'm too busy. Like what he was exactly what he was going to do in Eretz Yisrael so much. You know, so you go to Shaarei Chesed, you know, so hurts, so terrible. Anyway, so that's this idea. That's what it brought home to me. That, you know, the two of them, two events, sort of Shia's grabbing me the Aliyah, and you know, this guy coming. So the first type of chisaron of acham lev yikach mitzvahs is when mamish the mitzvah, you got so you already have the mitzvah. So you know, Rabbi Naomi gave you the money. He made you the shliach. The Gabbai asked you for the aliyah, and you turn it down. Right? That's really dumb. Okay, we'll be blunt. Okay. Now there are two other types which are a little bit harder, and this is where probably it gets a little bit more sophisticated. This is I don't know what's the order. I'm not sure of the order, but we'll do one at a time. One is when you're not. Yeah, there's a mitzvah, and it's up for grabs, something like Rav Shia's case. But you gotta, you know, you have to figure out a way how to get it. Because for this, you need a little bit of planning, right? In other words, it's not that the mitzvah was already in your lap; you have to chap it. Right? I'll give you an example. And this is, you know, I don't know if any of you ever davened at a minion factory. Right? I don't know. In Eretz Yisrael, there's this place called Vishnitz, which is a minion factory. Right? Now, you're davening a minion factory. Now, they don't have, like in the, some places, depends. Sometimes they sell the aliyahs, but they're not selling the aliyahs. They don't have like the yeshiva. We have a gabbai with a cheshbin that, you know, because you don't know, you never know every day who's at that minyan altogether. You're diving at the kotel. There's nobody knows anybody. There's 10 people and there's a minyan. So who gets the aliyah? It's up for grabs. Whoever this guy who's the gabbai going to give it to you. Right? Now I'm diving at the kotel Monday morning. We made a makeshift minion. Somebody's a gabbai. You know, first of all, maybe if I was a smart person, a chacham lev yikach mitzvahs, what would I do? I'd chap being the gabbai. Because no one's a gabbai. I will chap in and get the mitzvah, he's being the gabbai. Then once I'm the gabbai, I'll probably sneak and give myself, maybe, it's not hagba, I can't do hagba, I'll give myself glida, and I'll make believe like I'm a tzaddik. I don't get anyone else, I don't want to embarrass anyone else, you know. So I'll chop a few little mitzvahs there. But okay. But assuming someone else is a gabbai. Okay. So now there's a mitzvah up for grabs. I see a mitzvah. And I learned from Rav Shia, I want that mitzvah. Now how am I going to get it? Got a plot. How do you do? Stand by me. A rule, Gadol, it almost 90% of the time works. That when you're in a minyan where the Gabbai doesn't know anyone, he gives the aliyah to the person that's closest to him. It almost always works. Now, it doesn't always work, but it almost always works. Well, you know, there might be a guy, two people on the team, it depends on which is his vision. Sometimes he looks to the right, and sometimes he looks to the left. He could be standing on the wrong side, and you might not get it. But at least 50% of the cases, I've done it many times, and it works very well. You stand near the Gabbai. It just happens to be, you listen, you're standing there. You happen to standing there. You listen, the guys will have to stand there every once. You don't have to put up a big sign, I want the Aliyah. Now that's a little embarrassing, you know. But you, maybe you should, but okay. But you just stand there. You want to hear the Aliyah very clearly. So you're standing near him, in back of him, on the side of him. Inevitably, he turns around. Oh, the closest person. Oh, Yamot. Okay. Right? So that is already a blatant mitzvah up for grabs. But how do you get it? So you gotta, it's not already on a silver platter. You gotta plan a little bit. You gotta think. Rabbi Subar, who's one of the world's greatest Baalei Chassadim, so we once had a vod in Israel, so we asked him to speak on all his different Chassadim projects. It was amazing. Because it was a mind-boggling, the genius of his chesed. But without getting into it, he went ahead and he gave a few examples. First, he said that in Israel, this, only in Israel, when they build neighborhoods, they don't build them, you know, necessarily in order. They build a building, and then they start building, and then later there are holes in the middle, you know, land, empty land, and then those buildings get built. Makes sense, you know, because first they start building a little bit, and then so therefore what happens though is that the numbers in Israel in certain neighborhoods don't make any sense, because they first gave the numbers to the building that were built, and then the buildings that were built, and they go in order, but then the buildings that got built later, they have their number is out of whack of the number system. It happens that way in Sanhedrin Mechazet. He said, used to be, I don't know, maybe I think they gave new numbers recently. I don't know if they exato. But it used to be that way in Sanhedrin Mechazet. No one, including me, ever knew where building 130 was. It just it was somewhere, it just didn't exist. They're building 131 and 131 also, I don't know. But then 132, when there was a straight row. But 130 and 131 just didn't exist. It was somewhere stuck in the middle. And the same thing, so he told me in Ramot where he lives. So you have constantly, if you're in this neighborhood, you have constantly someone pulling up a car. We're in building 130. And everyone says, I don't know. So what does Rabbi Subar do? What do you do? He gets himself a map and he learns it. He says, everyone's always asking him where building 130 is. So, okay. So instead of telling him, I don't know, he gets a map and he finds out, oh, there's building 130. Okay. There's only a few buildings people don't know. Okay. And he memorized those buildings. That's already, you know, the opportunity is obvious. But you got to think, but how do I get it? So you plot how to get it. Making a gemach is the most simple example of this. Is that you might notice that there's a tremendous need of something in the yeshiva or in the world. That doesn't have to be in yeshiva. Gemach can be in the world. People, there's a need. Right? There's a tissue gemach we have. You know, you see people, you know, people need tissues, and always someone has a, you know, and he doesn't have a tissue, and it's an inconvenience. So you go out and you buy a box of tissues. So that's probably the second category of using the mitzvah is not in your hand, but it's obvious that there's a mitzvah, but you gotta figure out how you're gonna get it. Okay. The third case is same idea but a drop different, and that is that in many, many situations, it's not so obvious that there's a mitzvah. And you have to be, because you value the mitzvah, you see the opportunity for a mitzvah. It's like a guy we always had in the yeshiva, there's always somebody who's a going out and making money. All the years. I remember in Israel we had a guy who was not much a genius and making money. Baruch Hashem, I succeeded with him, and now he's a Rosh Yeshiva, one of our branches. But he was going out and making money. He was running every single candy machine in every yeshiva. I'm telling you, he put the candy machines and all the sewing machines in every yeshiva, and he put laundry. He was getting a commission on the laundry in every single yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He worked out a system with a laundromat, and he got people to work for him in every yeshiva and every seminary. That was genius. Anyway, he had a giant business he was running. Yeah, except he wasn't learning anything, but he was running a whole giant business. I'm not joking. But anyway, so there are people like, you know, just a special knack that they walk into and they see an opportunity to make money. Why? Because they, you know, they're master of it. And it's a skill also. So there's the same thing is that you can have, and you walk in and you see an opportunity to do a mitzvah where most people don't see it. You know, they're an average person. Shad is, he doesn't do the mitzvah not because he just didn't see it. You know, you say, why don't you do the mitzvah? What mitzvah? Right? I don't know there's a mitzvah here. So there's a hacham leiv yikach mitzvahs, is to develop the ability to observe mitzvahs when other people don't see it. Right? The most easy example of that, you know, to give... There's a guy in yeshiva who's depressed or not doing well or has no friends. It doesn't mean yeshiva, right? He's somewhere. So now, there's people don't put up signs, I am depressed, right? People don't do that. People don't put up in signs, I have no friends, I want a friend. Right? No, people don't do that. But if you're observant, if you pay attention to body language, to facial expressions, or just the fact that it doesn't seem to be have that many friends, then you put two to two together and you realize, you know, this guy doesn't know anyone. He probably doesn't have friends. So most people won't know that. And you'll have people that will even, you take a guy, and I see it all the time, you take a guy who's already unhappy and he's on the verge of leaving the yeshiva, and you have some very smart people, you know, smart with quotation marks, who will say him to all these dining jokes, you know, oh, why don't you go ahead and you know, leave or something, you know, they just give him a little, and then they make a wise case, you know, the guy says something and they, you know, they dig it in, you know, oh, that was a really stupid thing you said in Shir today, you know, just to make sure he really feels good, because they're oblivious, they don't do it on purpose. They don't notice that the guy's embarrassed. He feels bad that he felt, you know, he said something in shir, and the Rebbe, who was such a meanie, went ahead and let him have it. So they, you know, so they didn't notice that he's upset down, so they dig it in a little more. But a certain who's observant should see, you know, the guy got, you know, the Rebbe brutalized him. So, you know, he needs a little cheering up. So that's to observe, to go ahead and to be observed. There are many, many tremendous opportunities to be gotten, but most of these opportunities, people don't put up signs. I know example I would give, there was a guy in Eretz Israel, we called him the Shomer. Anyone know who the Shomer was? Shomer? I know. The Shomer was... He was a very impressive looking person. He looked like a real tzaddik, because an old man when I met him, you know, with a beard and whatever, an old Sfarish Jew. He was apparently, when the yeshiva went to Israel in 1968, I was still not in the yeshiva then, I was in the high school. So there was a building, there was a construction area near the yeshiva. And there was a shomer. His job was to stand by and stay in the construction area and make sure people didn't steal. People would steal the materials. You know, they would, when you're building, you drop off raw materials. And we don't want to be prejudiced, we don't want to say Arabs necessarily, but probably would come at night and steal it. So they had, in every building area, you had a shomer. Okay, so it was his job. He was a shomer. Now, what happened, that was, I think it's Baruch Sheik was the one that did it, is that, so he, the people, they heard that this Shomer, this is where he lives. He was living in an old Eged bus that was parked, and the building, that was his house. Yeah. And he had to notice it, that there's this guy that he doesn't have a house. You know, that's his job, that's his house. He comes, it's a great job, it comes with housing. An old bus, you know, that was it. So he went ahead and he noticed the guy's need, and he collected money, and he set him up within a store, and the guy became a very, he became a normal businessman. You know, he opened up a candy store or something, kiosk, you know, candy store, not exactly. Kiosk is his special Israeli thing, you know. But, he gave him the money to help get started. They started him, they got him out of that Shomer job, and they got him a regular apartment and a regular job, and they turned his whole life around. But that was because they noticed it. Right? They were observant. Right? The story that I usually tell, which because especially the guys that are going to Denver, they got to make sure to tell them Denver, is that we were when the whole yeshiva was there, we were walking in a neighborhood. There was a Rav Shia asked me once to help him mechazek his yeshiva, whatever reason. I don't want to get into it why, but there was a need. He needed some chizik in his yeshiva. I think what happened was his kota went on strike because they didn't want to get enough money, and they did it. That's an interesting place, Israel, sometimes. So and they was having a visitation from the government. That's when they went on strike. So he asked me to bring 10. So I brought like 10 guys to yeshiva to his kota to learn there. So we were coming to learn there, and I'm not sure if that was anywhere in strike, but maybe that was it. I don't want to be over and check here, but it was something like that. So we lived in a very, very old neighborhood. So we have these 10 guys in the yeshiva. We're walking through this neighborhood, and this old lady came out carrying 2 buckets of water. And, and chat was, in retrospect, chat is that she didn't have any running water in her house, and she had to go to a different place to get running water. She was bringing it to her house. But the amazing thing was that all our 10 Choshiva, Chavetz Chaim, and Bawi Musar, including myself, we walked this way, she walked that way, and, none of us noticed her. And the last guy was the back of the, that was Rafal Levitt, who's in Denver. Two of the guys, I think was you, the guy stay. So he noticed her, and he asked her, "Oh, can I help you?" And she was so happy. So I was like amazed myself. I just walked by this little old lady schlepping 2 heavy buckets. Why didn't I ask to help her? Terrence says, "I didn't notice." Right? So there's a Chaim Lev Yigach Mitzvah of noticing. Okay. Now, there is a thing of putting it all together, right? So we have like this. We're running. Getting out of time. So we have like this. The first Acham Lev Yigach Mitzvahs is when it's offered to you on a silver platter, don't turn it down. Second one is when you know there's an opportunity, but you have to plot to figure out how you're going to hop it. And the third one is to notice the opportunity. Now, obviously, sometimes 2 and 3 go together. The classic example, we mentioned Rabbi Subar. What did Rabbi Subar did? Those people who know. Gaine Gaines. Rabbi Subar was learning in a kodo. He was not learning at that time, he was not learning Chafetz Chaim. He was learning in a kodo in Knesset Yehuda. Knesset Yehuda had a yeshiva and also a cheder for about 1,000 kids. In Israel, there are a lot of kids. And they had a cheder for about 1,000 kids. And they served lunch. And the Saudi kids, they serve lunch. It's part of the yeshiva. And kids, especially young kids, have a tendency that they don't always eat their food, especially if it's healthy, right? You know that, yeah. So he's learning in this kodo, which is a yeshiva plus a fachader, and he notices the tremendous amount of food that's being thrown away. He says, "Wow, this could be great for his stucca. What a waste." So he went ahead and he created an organization, one man organization basically himself. He got a few other people involved. Further he got, he rented, but it was all with tremendous chachmah. He rented a machzan. A machzan is like a storage room. In Israel, in the bottom in each building, you have a little teeny like closets, which are, you know, depending on the size, which are like storage rooms. It's, you know, you live in an apartment upstairs. On the ground floor, there could be like 10 storage rooms. Each apartment gets a storage room. Okay, not very expensive. You rent a storage room. You put a refrigerator in the storage room. Then he goes in, and he, or he got other people, would run around quickly and collect all the food before the workers, you know, the Arabs throw out the food. So it was almost a race with the workers who could get to the work food faster. They would run around the dining room and collect all the leftover food. And then he got people to do the same thing in all the other schools in Yerushalayim or a number of other schools. He got a tremendous quantity of food. And each school left it, they put it back in the bags. He got another, a person, he hired someone to make a car route to go like a taxi, so to speak, every day, stop off at Knesset Yehuda at 1:30, this school at 1:45, this school, you know, pick up the food from these five different schools and put it in the refrigerator in this machzan. The machzan is locked, but the key or the combination, you tell people. And he says he told lots of our people who we thought might need that, listen, every day I get a tremendous volume of food and it gets put in this machzan, and I have nothing to do with it. So if, okay, I assume you don't need, but in case you ever you need, just go in and help yourself. Don't ask. Just go in and help yourself and take the food. And every day, you know, he had hundreds and hundreds of dollars of food, and every day it basically would be empty. Right? Which means that lots and lots of people, I mean, it wasn't like he, guys, I'm sure he checked a little bit, you know, but lots of people are coming in and helping themselves to their daily meals. With the Gvaldika system, no one knew about it, they weren't embarrassed. Right? It's just a brilliant thing. It didn't cost any money, came out. He raised a little money to cover, you know, some of the minor expenses. But it's basically, he created a system of giving thousands and thousands of dollars to Staka without barely costing anything. Why? Because he paid attention, he saw, he thought of a plan how to do it, and he figured out, you know, You know, that's a gewaltige thing. Rabbi Kanarik, has said also many similar things, that he had these Gainisha plans how to help people, and now's not the time, but it's not actually Gainis, you know. But anyway, that's the ability to, you know, that's not really a chacham leiv yikach mitzvahs, of the combination of seeing an opportunity, seeing a need, and figuring out a solution. You know, putting it all together and coming up with a gainus eitza. And you know, I don't want to say he's one of the biggest alstuck in Yerushalayim, but he's given out over the years thousands and thousands of dollars of stuff. He's a poor kolo guy. You know, basically, he's a kolo guy, and he's giving out tens of thousands of dollars of money and food because he has this chap. You know, that's it. And he has other chaps. You know, he has, I just remembered another thing he tells. He says, when the people, you know, there's always, especially in Israel, there's a lot of mishalachim come collecting. So when they would finish collecting in the yeshiva, they would always go to Rabbi Subar. Why would they go to Rabbi Subar? Because Rabbi Subar ran a change gemach. What was his change gemach? The opposite of a change gemach. Mishalachim are weighed down with heavy coins. So he would change it to them for bills. What if they don't want to walk out so many? They're going from place to place, you know, schlepping all these coins. It's heavy. It's hard. It's holes in your pocket. So they knew that after they would stop up by him, and they would give him whatever change they had, and he had bills prepared. And again, he had a system. I assume he had one of these things that, you know, they easily made rolls, and okay, he went to the bank every so often. But it was, you know, a chap that, you know, that the person would, you know, he would tell the other, you know, when you finish collecting, come to me, I'll give you a bill for all your change. I want all your change, so give me your change and I'll back it, get a bill. Okay, anyway, so that's it. Now, years ago, it might have been like a year or two ago, I had a group that we worked on Cheshbon and together as working on Eitzes, on Tikkun HaMidos, and the way the group worked, that everybody in the group had to agree to keep the certain Kabbalahs that the group made that week. It was not such an easy thing, because in order to join the group, you had to agree to keep it. So one of the Midas that we worked on was this Mida, and the Kabbalah of the week was that everybody in the group had to figure out some brainstorm, some large, not a minor, not like, oh, you know, I'll go ahead and I'll bring, you know, not this, a minor, you know, machron to the table, you know, some major earth-shattering, so to speak, mitzvah that they wouldn't have thought of before, and to do it during that week. And then we had, you know, we used to meet twice in the week, and that was a Kabbalah. And at the end of the week, we went around, you know, because the guy gets suggestions, and every guy was amazing. Every guy figured out a brilliant eitzah. I was mamish. Some of the eitzahs the guys had were, I don't remember them anymore, but they were brilliant. You know, that we even had. I remember that we had a manila envelope in my office. And of those who remember, this was. And the guys, if anyone had any eitzahs, they wanted to be anonymous, so the guys would put suggestions in the envelope, and then the group, we would read through all the different suggestions of eitzahs. But they were like a lot of brilliant suggestions. The guys, Haravanya, and they came up with brilliant eitzahs of how to do, you know, mitzvahs. You know, mitzvahs, chesed. But not that, you know what I'm saying, but even, obviously, Hacham Le'higa Mitzvahs means even if it's a little chesed, every little thing is a big thing. But some of them were, you know, like saving a person's life. You know, they were, not literally maybe, but figuratively and close to literally. So there's definitely opportunities out there. There are tremendous, tremendous opportunities of mitzvahs constantly, and tremendous mitzvahs. They're also, you know, okay. I mean, now you want me to make a plug for fundraising. Anyone know someone who wants to give $1 million to yeshiva? It happens to sound funny, but it's not so funny. Many of the yeshiva's biggest donations were gotten because somebody, you know, not a fun rep, the yeshiva, made a connection. You know, my father-in-law told me that he got Tells, Cleveland, one of their largest donations to help build their whole campus, just because he used to be he used to do whatever business he was in, and he met someone who he was Messiah, that he would be a good person for, you know, and he told her she was in Tells, to Cleveland, to go after this guy, you know. So the there are many, many major myths, whether it's Kiriv, whether it's stalker, whether it's getting a guy who's depressed, we're talking about even the ability to do major mitzvahs. But you just have to notice it, you have to plan, and you got to be mash of it. That's, alright, that's Hacham Levi Gach Mitzvahs. Okay.